You got a great name, Lay.
My dad's name is Ray. My name's, you know.
Is Lay.
Yes, sir.
Ray and Lay.
Ray and, exactly.
Okay.
Mom's name is Kathy.
Anytime you're ready.
Okay. Hello, Mr. Townsend. My name is Lay Wilburn, and I'm here to interview you today. Could you please state your full name for the record?
Yes, for the record, my name is James Terrell Townsend. I go by Terry, a nickname.
Okay, very nice. Like Terry Hogan, you know, Hulk Hogan. He goes by, his name is Terry.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Hulkster. Anyway, so, sir, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you here today. The purpose of this is not to get any incriminating information or you know, distribute this to the media, but it's more for a learning experience and get your lessons learned and your hindsight, your 2020 vision, and your experiences here so that we can memorialize those and pass those on.
It's a great idea, and I appreciate y'all doing this.
Okay, sir. So, to get into it, what got you into the life of service, and where were those first inklings?
Mononucleosis. I was working at a bank, 40 hours a week, $90 a month.
Wow.
And
as a teller?
No, I was what they euphemistically called a nighttime bookkeeper. What we really did is college kids came in and hand-posted the checks.
Wow.
And I got sick, and my dad, we're from Brady, Texas, and my dad's close friend was Earl Rutter, who was mayor of Brady, and my dad was mayor pro tem, and he called Earl to get his son a cushy job so I wouldn't work myself to death. So Earl called the new state representative, Harold Kennedy, from Marble Falls, and Harold had been elected following Reuben Sinterfit, because Reuben Sinterfit had been in the legislature for 15 years and was speaker for 2 years, and so Harold was thrilled to have a statewide office holder call him because at that time Earl was the land commissioner.
Oh, wow.
So I became the chief of staff, actually the only staff. Mm-hmm. And in those days, there were no offices except on the floor. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Kennedy was a young lawyer starving to death in Marble Falls. So half the time he was back practicing law and would tell me how to vote in that, you know, vote with so-and-so or against so-and-so.
So you would actually be voting?
I would actually be voting. It wasn't legal, but we did that.
Oh, wow.
Then he ran for the Senate.
Okay.
And unfortunately did not get elected, and I was in my senior year at law school.
Okay. Where were you in law school then?
At the university.
Oh, yes, sir. Okay. Hey. Oh, hook 'em horns. Very nice.
Doesn't it so good for you? Anyway, in those days, the election and the primaries were in July, and in August was the runoff.
Okay.
And I had three people running against me, any one of whom was better qualified than I was, but I didn't know that. And in a small rural district, I had seven counties northwest of Austin, Burnett, Lampasas, and Seba, Goldthwaite, which is Mills County, McCullough, which is Brady, then across to Gillespie County, Fredericksburg, and then over to Llano. And I had more cows than I had people, but they were good cows and good people.
Good cows and good people.
And so I had a remarkable experience because I had all my hair then, Lay. Yeah. And I looked like I was about 18 years old. And when I drove up after I got elected without a runoff, which was wonderful because all the people that were waiting for the runoff to decide who to serve,
right.
I could say, I'm sorry, you know, you missed the boat.
If you
want to help me next time, that's fine.
Yeah.
But when I drove up, they would not let me park. They said, Terry, you know this is for representatives. You can't do this.
Oh, because you had served here.
Because I'd worked
here. Right.
Yeah. And then when I went on the floor of the House, Marshall Bell was the senior member of the House. What do you call a senior member? I'm lost.
The dean.
The dean. He
yes,
was
sir.
The dean of the House. He flipped me a quarter and said, get me a cup of coffee, Terry.
Oh, no.
And I ran to get him a cup of coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, he was mortified later to find out I was the representative. But it was great for me because anytime I needed Marshall's vote, I could go ask him, and I would get it. Then, after we'd been here 2 weeks, I went to get my paycheck, and they wouldn't give me the paycheck. They said you had to be a member, you know. And it was kind of funny. I learned something like you probably already know. Some people teach you different when you're just an employee here than when you're a representative. Real people don't treat you differently.
Right.
Everybody's, whether it's a governor or the janitor that cleans up this place, they're important people.
Right.
And so it was a great learning experience. I filed at 21 and was elected at 22.
Wow.
And was 22 when I started serving. My birthday's in February, so, you know, I got to be 23. At that time, I was the youngest member that had ever served in the House.
Wow.
Other than people that had been appointed during Reconstruction. You know.
Right.
So it was a great experience. I loved it. I had 8 years here. It was terrific. I wouldn't go back if they gave me the place.
So as a freshman member mm-hmm. and a newly minted freshman member coming off the heels of being a staffer, I know that, you know, it was a different dynamics and
it
people
was.
Had to get used to you and your new position.
Yeah.
But how were your colleagues on the floor? How did that go?
They were wonderful. And in those days, you really got to know everybody. Charlie Wilson, my second term, sat across the aisle from me. He became a congressman subsequently. Tony Corriott was a good friend. These were liberals, and I was a conservative Democrat.
Right.
I never saw a Republican until my last session.
Oh, wow.
And there was a special election in Galveston, and in those days, John Tower went to the Senate because they didn't have runoffs. It was a plurality.
Okay.
And the legislature changed that, you know. Uh-huh. They also changed the election day.
Okay.
They got tired of, as they called us, flat bellies, running against them.
Okay.
Because when I ran, there were 8 people from law school that ran. 3 of us were elected, mm-hmm. and... they just didn't like the young guys out there.
Right.
In a rural district, it makes all the difference in the world. I didn't have anything else to do. So at 6 o'clock, they'd hear me putting up posters, and they'd see me around the square. And those 7 counties, I tried to be in 2 counties every day. I had a big sign on my car. Mm-hmm. And I went door-to-door in the town and gate-to-gate in the country.
And what was your platform when you were going around during that campaign?
That I was the most qualified person because I'd been chief of staff in the legislature for 4 years for our state representative.
Absolutely.
Which... probably is a stretch to make things more. But, you know, when you're 21, 22,
right.
you don't have a whole lot of experience.
You're right. You're absolutely right about that.
I served with 2 governors, one not very great, Price Daniel. And
why
John,
would you say that was a...
I'll tell you.
Okay.
And the second was John Connally, who was the greatest man I ever served with.
Yes, sir.
Price Daniel was a consummate politician.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have any values. He put the finger up and see how the wind was blowing.
Right.
And the reason I say that is in my first session, they paid us $25 a day, which was a fortune to me
right.
as a young college student.
Right.
But if you were running a law practice or a realtor or whatever, you know, you were starving to death
Absolutely.
At $25 a day. We needed to pass a tax bill. And we were in special session for 3 months to pass a $32 million tax bill. That's just a rounding error today.
Right, absolutely. Budget does.
There was no leadership from Price Daniel. Daniel, you know, basically wanted to blame the legislature for not getting it done, and you had to have leadership. My second term, it was a choice between a sales tax or an income tax, and I supported the sales tax very strongly. In fact, I thought it ought to be across the board. My dad was a merchant in Brady, and all those exemptions were going to drive merchants crazy. But
right.
anyway, we passed it, and Price Daniel vetoed it the first time, I think. I may be wrong. At any rate, the second time it came up, he wouldn't sign the bill. He let it become a law without his name, thinking he wouldn't be blamed.
Right.
Wrong. John Connally ran against the Daniel tax, and it ate him up. You know, Daniel,
right.
Daniel was
wow.
badly defeated.
Right.
But anyway, yes, I thoroughly enjoyed serving. My first 2 sessions, I didn't vote for the person who became speaker. The first session...
And what was the rationale behind that? Or what?
Yeah, the first session, Joe Burkett was from Kerrville, my neighbor from Gillespie County.
Mm-hmm.
He had 110 votes pledged for him because mm-hmm. Wagner Carr was not going to run for re-election. In those days, you were speaker 1 term, usually, and it passed on.
Mm-hmm.
Wagner was going to run for attorney general, and so he broke his word to Joe Burkett and a lot of people and decided to run, and he won by 2 votes.
Wow.
And I can tell you who the 2 votes were, but I'm not going to, because they got to be chairman of state affairs and chairman of appropriations, and they were both pledged to Joe Burkett.
Wow.
So I learned a lesson as a young guy. I grew up, my dad was most influential in my life. Your word was your bond.
Absolutely.
And you give your word, you stay with it. Second time around, the conservative running for speaker was Wade Spillman from the Valley, a wonderful man. And he was running against Jimmy Turman. Jimmy Turman ran on the pledge of a conservative with a heart. I didn't know conservatives didn't have a heart.
Right.
What the heck does that mean? But anyway, he got all the liberal Democrats, which there weren't many.
Mm-hmm.
He got all the moderates, and he peeled off a few of the conservatives and got elected speaker. And 10 days, 2 weeks into the session, the speaker's aide came out and said, "Mr. Speaker wants to see you." I said, "Fine." So I went back, and he said, "You haven't turned in a committee request card." I said, "Mr. Speaker, you know I was on the other side. I campaigned hard for Wade Spillman. Just put me where you want to put me." He said, "Well, I'm not going to give you a good committee assignment." I said, "I didn't expect it." He said, "Is there any committee you don't want to serve on?"
Uh-oh.
And like a fool,
I'm still young.
You know, you'd think by 24 I'd have a second session, and I don't know better. I said liquor regulation, because I have seven counties, five of them are dry,
right,
and they drive to my two wet counties to drink, and it's I could do that. And you know, the first committee I was assigned to was liquor regulation.
Yeah.
The second, third term, Jimmy, not Jimmy, I'm sorry. Boy, the mind goes first. Byron Tuttle was the conservative, and I voted for him and was on the team and got good and got to be a chairman and all that. And then the next one was Byron resigned. Mm-hmm. He was running for a second term, but he resigned to be appointed to Railroad Commission. Mm-hmm. And so Ben Barnes was there, and he was my neighbor and a good friend. And I was on that team, and I got great committee assignments. So, you know, I've seen both sides of it where you don't – I learned to play bridge the first two sessions because
right.
I didn't have any committees to go to.
Right.
They didn't even meet, some of them, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I learned the opportunity of leadership, leading the highway committee one time and motor transportation the other, which ultimately ended up in my career because the trucking industry had all their business before motor transportation. And I carried legislation for them. Every time you see a twin trailer, that was my bill.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the man who had run it for 17 years was General Taylor, who was a former member of the Senate and a full-fledged general. And I was chosen to succeed him. Mm-hmm. And it was a great experience because I told them I wouldn't come unless I could work a year next to General Taylor to learn the association. I knew politics, but I didn't know how to run the association. So that's what I did. And then General Taylor, I hired him to be our chief lobbyist in the Senate. Mm-hmm. So all the 20 years I was there, he was in the Senate, a wonderful friend, and I've been blessed.
Wow, that is.
My daddy told me, Lee, when I was young like you, if I were very lucky, I'd meet five great people in my life. Now, they may not be great to anybody else, but to me, that were major, in fact, and he was right. And, you know, I've been really blessed. And two of my five I served with, Jim Nugent.
Okay.
Jim Nugent's the meanest SOB I've ever known, and he was my best friend. And Ace Pickens.
Okay. And I've interviewed him earlier.
Yeah, he said he's really good. And he said you were nice, and I said, well, that's good. I need somebody nice. Anyway, we roomed together my last session, and they were great influences on my life. Jim was a trial lawyer and a conservative, mm-hmm. but I mean, he was the kind, if I got a criminal indictment, I'd go get Jim Nugent's room. He was the meanest so-and-so I've ever seen, but he was good.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm sorry. What else
need.
Do you
no,
want
no,
to know?
I'm talking, you
to,
no,
I'm
no,
talking
that,
to you, Dad.
No, that's perfect. No, that's
Is that
perfect.
What you want? Okay.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Jim died 2 months ago.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
92 years of age.
Oh, that's good.
He went the way we wanted to go. Absolutely. He was sitting on his bed and just fell over with a massive heart attack. And he was in the Summit, which is a retirement community here.
Okay.
And when I left the Trucking Association, I went to the hospitals and ran them for 15 years, and I learned some really important things. For example, like only 10% of the people actually die and go to heaven, boom. The other 90%, there's a short-term or a long-term illness, and the longer we live, the more of us live in an incapacitated status. And, you know, my goal is that when God's ready for me, I'm ready. But I don't want to spend 3 years, you know, comatose almost.
Absolutely.
You know, but that's not my choice.
It's
the good book will tell me what that is, and I'll accept it.
Yes,
it's a good
sir.
Thing we don't know what the good book says.
Yes, sir. You're right about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so in your first session, what was your big issue or your big bill that you...
It was the tax bill.
Okay, in the first session.
In the first session and in the second session.
So both of those were dedicated to
that's what I did. My third session... Earl Rudder was from Brady, mm-hmm. as I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. and Earl had gotten the Regents at A&M to vote to be co-ed, mm-hmm. and you would think that would be a good thing,
right.
but Old Army did not want co-ed.
Okay.
They wanted the core.
Right.
And the trouble is, we were graduating 2,500 Aggies, and it's costing as much as it was doing for 40,000 UT students. You can't
right.
do that.
Right.
And so Earl came to me and asked me if I would... helped the state representative from College Station, who was a freshman, mm-hmm. defeat Old Army's bill, and we did. And that was the best thing we ever did, as far as I was
and
concerned.
And so what was the result of that today? Like
it's A&M.
Okay, gotcha.
Earl Rudder had the vision to know that A&M could never become a major institution mm-hmm. recognized worldwide unless it was co-ed.
Right.
And you may not know a lot about Earl, but Earl was a colonel and head of Rutter's Rangers. And General Marshall gave him what he later described as the most difficult order in World War II. Their job was to scale the cliffs of Pointe du Hoc, which was 200 feet straight up, because the Germans had heavy artillery at the top of that, trained down on Omaha Beach.
Right.
And they would, we lost enough people as it were, but they would have literally obliterated our people. They anticipated a 90% fatality in Earl's Rangers. It was pretty successful because of the heavy bombardment. It kept the people, the Germans, away from shooting down on them.
Right.
And they, of course, they shot them when they got up, but they had 25% casualties.
Wow.
And they had another 40% that were wounded some way or another. Earl Rutter was wounded. Mm-hmm. When they got up there, they found no guns. Instead, they found telephone poles that the Germans had put there to make them look like guns.
Wow.
And Earl couldn't figure this out, and so he began scuffing the grass, and he discovered a rail line underneath the grass. And they had rails going back to the heavy forest, and the guns were hidden back there when the bombardment started.
So they would bring them out.
And they would bring them out.
Wow.
And so the Rangers went back and put explosives and exploded all the barrels, and they were never used. And Earl, in my humble opinion, should have gotten a Medal of Honor for that.
Absolutely.
But he didn't. Yeah.
That's I've heard that story. I was in the Air Force, and I was stationed there in Germany, and I've heard that story. That's amazing that you know him.
Yeah, he was he's remarkable, remarkable. I was talking to a remarkable man. I was talking to a lady downstairs, Marcia, who went to A&M, and she had a flat going to school one day, and it was raining, and so she, you know, was out trying to change a flat, and this guy comes up in a pickup in a suit, gets out, offers to help her, fixes her tire, goes on his way, just ready to leave. And she said, "Well, what do you do?" He said, "Oh, I work at A&M." He said, "Well, I'm going to A&M. What do you do?" He said, "Oh, just around campus, I do things." She thought he was janitorial. When they went to the first session for the new students, he was the president of the university.
Wow,
that's the kind of man that Earl Rutter was. Earl told me before he died, and he died of a massive heart attack in 1964, that he thought Pointe du Hoc would be the worst experience in his life, but the worst experience in his life was making A&M co-ed, because Old Army just hated it, and I think he had an early heart attack from all the stress, to be perfectly honest.
But
today nobody even understands this story. They don't know what I'm talking about.
But he left a heck of a legacy, and he stood for something.
He did, and that's important.
Absolutely. Okay, so, sir, what was your relationship with the – you served under four speakers.
Yes, sir.
And so the first two, you say you didn't vote for those.
Well, Wagner Carn didn't hold it against me as a freshman, because I was a conservative, and he gave me pretty decent committees.
Okay.
I didn't get very much help from the next speaker, but I had great relationships with Byron Tunnell and Ben Barnes, and they were two of the best speakers I think we've ever had. I'm an old fogey in this respect. I don't think people should, and I love Joe Strauss, he's a great speaker, but I don't like the current 30-year trend of a speaker running four or five terms, because it's good in the terms of the experience. He knows better how to be a speaker of the second and third term and so forth, but it's bad in that the speakership was designed in our Constitution to pass it around, and of course, legislators and Congress, congressmen were not supposed to be full-time people. They were supposed to come down, pass laws, then go back and live under them. It's not as bad in Texas as it is in Washington, because I lobbied up there, but it's pretty bad here. I mean, if you're a D and I'm an R, I don't even talk to you. And that's wrong, because some of the best ideas I got were from Bob Eckhart and Charlie Wilson and some of the liberals, and I voted with them.
Right.
You know, but anyway, that's
I
just
met both of them today.
Did you really?
I did. Both really
well,
nice.
Well, you didn't meet Charlie Wilson, because he's gone to heaven.
No, Eckhart. Though.
Oh, Bob Eckhart. Eckhart. And Tony Korth is also gone to heaven, but Ms. Korth lives out where I live in Carinzia, which is a retirement community in Southwest Austin.
Oh, wow. Cool. Okay, so your former relationship with the speakers were good, the last two.
Yes.
And then what about your relationships with, like, the parliamentarian and that staff?
Well, I served with Bob Johnson, and Bob Johnson's the best parliamentarian that ever lived. I mean,
have you met Chris Griesel, though?
I've not met him.
Okay.
He may be good.
You've got to meet Mr. Griesel.
Well, I'd love to do that. Bob was a huge guy, 6'4", and from Dallas.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, in those days, we had temper fights on the floor just like y'all do, I guess, Wednesday night at 3 o'clock.
Absolutely.
Things were pretty strong. Bob was at the front mic. No, he was at the back mic. And we had this liberal who had a hair like your and mine
right.
at the front Mike, trying to pass some god-awful bill that wasn't going to pass. And he called Bob a liar. And the speaker's gaveling, and Bob is running up there, and if four or five of us hadn't tackled him, he'd have killed that guy. Oh. He really would have, you know. But I loved him. He was a close friend. He taught me how to play bridge. That's what I did my first two sessions. I learned to play bridge. I think I mentioned
so,
that.
So what do you think made him such a good parliamentarian?
He knew the rules. Okay. Plus, he was loyal to the speaker, and he knew when things were coming up. He never did get caught short, you know, not expecting a parliamentary inquiry. When I served my first term, Joe Burkett didn't have anything to do because he defeated speaker, and so he taught me the rules. Mm-hmm. And the only thing he asked of me is when his successor came, would I teach him the rules? And so I did. And I hate to confess it to you, but his name was Jim Nugent.
Oh.
most people don't like me telling that because Jim Nugent, there's an old story about the speaker telling the new freshman member, you're in good shape. There's nobody opposed to your bill as far as I know, but there's some bad news. And he said, what's that? And he said, Mr. Nugent's in the back mic with the rule book. He killed a lot of bills.
So how important were the rules?
They're very important. For example, this happens every session, I guess. Somebody will bring a bill up, and it will fail. And somebody on the losing side would say, I move to reconsider and table House Bill 28. Most members don't know. It's not debatable. It's an automatic vote. If it's reconsidered and tabled, it is dead for the session. It can never come back. That's why the rules are important.
Absolutely.
And I guess y'all still have those.
Yes, sir, we do.
Yeah.
We do.
Quite and a lot of members, you know, don't know the rules. They didn't spend much time. But anyway, I enjoyed the rules. I enjoyed using the rules to meet my ends. But I also understood that a lot of members didn't understand the rules. And so you can educate them.
Right. So do you still follow Texas politics at all?
I do. I don't come down here anymore. Obviously, when I was with the Trucking Association for 20 years and hospitals for 15, I was down here as the chief spokesman. I was smart enough to hire people better than I, to do the job better than I, you know. But I just read in the newspapers, you know, what happens. Sometimes that's kind of hard with the liberal rag that we have in Travis County, but I do read the Wall Street Journal, which gives me an insight of what's happening up in Washington.
Right. So are there any issues that you've seen currently or in this?
Yeah, the Sanctuary City is, I think, a big issue. I'm very much for it. I think it's wrong for our sheriff, who is liberal as she can be, and that doesn't bother me. She's a sheriff, not a policyholder. But to say that we're not going to take people that ISIS wants when they have them in custody at the sheriff's department and not turn them over. I just, you know, that if you're in the country illegal, you can color it any way you want to, but you're still illegal. Now, do I think they all ought to be rounded up and sent back? No, I don't believe that. But if a person has a criminal record or he gets filed on in a misdemeanor or a criminal record, then I think ISIS ought to have the opportunity to look at him and say, is this a good guy or a good gal, or do we send him back?
Right. Okay, so that's the big issue of this current session up until now.
I thought it was bathrooms. I didn't want to bring that up.
Well, that we haven't gotten to that one yet. It's coming.
But no, you're right.
But thus far, that anti-sanctuary cities has been the largest bill.
Yes, sir.
Do you see any parallels between that one, not per se in subject matter, but gravity for the entire state during your time here?
That's a hard question because in the time that I was here, we were a rural legislature. We thought from that point of view,
okay.
And quite candidly, we didn't pay teachers enough, we didn't pay DPS people enough, we didn't pay state employees enough. And it's better now. They still are not getting paid what they ought to be paid.
Right.
These guys, these DPS down there, and I've talked to a couple of them today, and I was very close to the DPS because Colonel Spears was there when I was chairman of the committee, and we were helping him get appropriations. But we've got DPS people beginning salaries at $70,000 that are less than a constable makes here in Travis County. Maybe not Travis County, but in some counties. And those men and women are trained professionally, and they've got a terrific job to do. And so today, after one man, one vote, we do get legislators, I think, that have a more cosmopolitan viewpoint than the former that I served with, that thought anything, you know, over $10,000 was big time money, you know, because he didn't make but six. So I guess that's the main difference right now. I learned this, Lane. When you're in this position, you're going to have lots of people give you terrific ideas on how to spend money, and they're all good, but you can't do them all.
Right.
Charlie Wilson was a good friend of mine, and surprisingly, as a liberal, he supported the sales tax. And I said, Charlie, why are you doing this? He said, because you conservatives are so dumb, you let us liberals spend this into the point where we'll have an income tax in 10 years.
Right.
He was wrong. We still have it yet, but, you know, we may have it yet.
Right. Okay, so, sir...
I'm talking too much.
No, absolutely not. No.
Okay.
Was there anything that I didn't cover that you wanted to share, or was there any funny stories or anything happened behind the scenes that?
Well, I'll share something that concerns me.
Okay.
Today, and I learned this even back when I was lobbying, and I haven't lobbied since 2001. Members don't know each other. When I served, in the first place, the first two terms, there were no offices. You were on the floor of the House.
Right.
The last two terms, about a third of us, if we were on the speaker's team, had offices, but you really got to know the people. And just because someone was a liberal and you were a conservative or vice versa, you gave respect to their viewpoint on issues that affected the entire state.
Right.
Today, I know it's this way in Washington, and it's probably this way somewhat here. You got the D's over here and the R's over here, and they don't talk to each other, and the end result is we don't get some of the good ideas that we ought to get from the other side, whether you're liberal or conservative.
Right.
And I don't see that changing. The people of Texas don't want a full-time legislature. It's impossible to figure out 2 years from now what the budget requirements are going to be. But we came out of Reconstruction lay. They don't want the legislature meeting, you know. And the end result, we're kind of handicapped. But the flip side of that is California that's become a permanent legislature, just like Congress meets around the clock. They make God knows how much money, you know. And I really believe our founding fathers had it right that you ought to pass laws and then go home and live under those laws. Congressmen don't do that.
No, definitely not.
And most of our representatives do more of it because they only serve 140 days at the most every 2 years unless they're special sessions.
Right.
But that's just my soapbox.
No. I definitely appreciate that, sir. It's been an honor and a pleasure to meet with you. No, it really
you're
has,
fine.
Sir.
I hope he'll edit a lot of this out.
No, it's going to be good stuff. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I noticed, when I was looking at the pictures downstairs,
yes, sir.
The various members,
yes, sir.
There are no or very few pictures from the time when I served.
Is it really?
And that was 56 to 59.